Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans, college football playoff fans across the nation and around the world. This is Tim May. You recognize my co-pilot, Matt Wilhelm. He really needs no introduction. Just ask the Miami Hurricanes of 2002 who Matt
Yes.
Wilhelm is. Ask the Green Bay Packers. What Super Bowl was that? 2009 season? I'm trying to remember.
2010 season, Super
Yeah,
Bowl
two,
45.
there you go. Who Matt Wilhelm is. I go, yeah, I was my teammate when we won the Super Bowl. Man, I have my intros just stink. I'll just admit it right up front because I start thinking of more things I want to say, and gush instead of getting to the point. Matt Wilhelm, Ohio State's about to play Oregon in the Rose Bowl, a college football playoff quarterfinal. This season has come full circle. With that said, we're going to talk about that maybe in a minute. But Matt, being an alum of Ohio State, a ring wearing national championship member of an Ohio State 2002 national championship team, you had to feel pretty good about what you saw in the frigid, frenzied atmosphere of Ohio Stadium on Saturday night. The beatdown, as they'll call it for years to come, in Knoxville, Tennessee. But Ohio State 42, Tennessee 17, and it wasn't even that close.
No.
Let's start on the opposite way. Most of the time you would start a conversation about this, about what you saw. Most people would start with Will Howard and that wide receiver core, Jeremiah Smith, in a way they just went clickety-clack right down the track three straight times and took a 21-0 lead. I would like to point out it was 21-0, which meant Tennessee's offense was not allowed off the mat, pardon the pun, until it was already down 21-0. The defense, maybe the deep best defense in the country, came to play on Saturday night. You had to be swelling with pride.
Absolutely, Tim. And again, thank you for having me. And it's always so good to join you to discuss everything Buckeye football, right? You have to say going into the football game, as you kind of preface the Buckeye alum and having been a player as well. I'm not a betting man. I don't get into spreads and so on and so forth. But my feeling wasn't immense that we were going to I don't want to say not win this football game, but roll in the football game the way that we did. And so much of it had to do with the ingrained in my brain was the debacle that was both the play and the coaching and coaching strategy for our football game, that last opportunity at Ohio Stadium against that team up north. And it just not being good enough, not physical enough, not executing well enough. Will Howard put the football in limbo multiple times with two turnovers. And then I also believe in preparation for that said opponent, our coaches thinking we could do one thing and not being able to do it and not pivoting to another thing. So it raised some concerns. And then, you transition to, 10 to 11 days to prepare for a very, very good SEC football team. And a team that I know that when they played, gosh, on CBS earlier in the season, and what did they? They beat Bama and ripped down the goalposts, I believe. And it was just in a dominating fashion with elite playmakers at all positions with an extremely young. Quarterback. I was like, there was a period of time Tennessee would be a team that's going to run for the natty because of their makeup. And so that said, quality opponent was concerned, not concerned we were going to lose, but then the game happens and the game starts the way that it is. I believe the Ohio Stadium was set up appropriately with Scarlet out to differentiate itself from many other home football games because it was in fact a college football playoff game. I
Plus,
thought
there
the
was a lot of
debut.
orange in there. You know what I
Sure.
mean?
Of
So,
course there was. Absolutely. I also think like at least on television, the demeanor of Ryan Day and this football team in the pregame aspects, very businesslike, which is what you love to see. Not taking anything for granted. And we talked last couple of times about no stone left unturned. It's it's win or go home. This is that March Madness feel of doing everything you can to get that W. When the game is over, and then the game starts, and they roll, and you see a football team that I think a lot of Buckeye fans probably only saw or wanted to see all season long, but only saw in little pockets, like little
Right.
runs, you know. And I can't even necessarily say you saw a whole football game all season long played the way that they played last Saturday night against the Tennessee Volunteers. You would get a half, you would get a quarter, you would get a drive where you go, gosh, why don't we just do that all, you know, every single
Right.
time? And I know that
Yeah.
you can. I
Hey,
know
wait
that
a
you
minute.
can.
I even asked Emeka Egbuka that very question lead up to. I said, people saw that drive at the end of the first half against Michigan, and they go, why can't you do that all the time? You know, and he kind of looked at me funny because, you know, just because. But, you know, we saw it three straight times to start the game. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
It
no
really
problem.
almost
But
four straight. Go
then I
ahead.
also think though, as it from this point forward, it may be something to consider with you know, how we go win football games, how we dominate. And that's the one thing I think as a former football player, and you know, we talked about it, and I was I'm not overly harsh. I'm just very straightforward in regards to how forgettable this team would have been, you know, or potentially still could be
Oh,
if they
yeah.
don't go accomplish some of these goals. And so to play loose, to play aggressive, to have the players immensely confident in this game plan, to have it orchestrated appropriately and kind of like thrust into the players by the coaches, you know, it's like, you know, you know, not just a golf clap, like you give the clap to Ryan Day to be able to address major issues from the last time we saw them to this football game. And I know that you're playing a different opponent. And then to also just say like let's let it rip and let's go. And like I said, I'm tired of the words. And so it was great. I was tired that, you know, the unfinished business and the leave no doubt and all these five-star, four-star recruits that we, you know, we woo over all offseason. And then when you can't get in the football and they can't get on the football field, it's like, well, what good are they? You know, they're just gonna hit the portal and leave anyway. So it was the perfect storm, I believe, Saturday night at home, everything on the line for this football team to go play their best and feature their playmakers. That's our talented defensive backs. Great to see these highly touted recruits that we have loved on as Buckeyes for so long. Really, it really all pay off in a big, big moment. And it almost like for all of them, that's Will Howard as a transfer, Travion, you know, Junkins in his role. Jeremiah Smith as a freshman, JTT and Jack Sawyer, in some cases, play probably collectively. Both of them play at the same time their best football game as teammates, I think, in the Scarlet and Gray or the Scarlet and Scarlet. So it was just a culmination of a lot of things that went really, really well. But that's a testament to the hunger and desire that these guys have and the leadership of Ryan Day and his staff.
Yeah, I was going to say, and then, you know, ladies and gentlemen, for your viewing pleasure, a newcomer to the scene, Luke Montgomery, at left guard, didn't start the game. They started with Saraville at left guard, Tegra Shibola at right guard, but they interspersed those guys just like Ryan Day said they would. Luke Montgomery had a couple of crushing blocks on a couple of those touchdowns, and you're going, this is a unit of the team, the most beleaguered unit of the team. That was their seventh iteration of an offensive line this season, and all the fall off, all the iterations started coming in the first quarter or first half of the game at Oregon when Josh Simmons got hurt, maybe the best tackle in college football in some regards, as far as the way people were looking at the draft possibilities for him, but one of the top tackles in football. And then you lose, well, Will Kaczmarek in that same game, and in the first, and also you lost Tegra Shibola for the rest of the first half in that game. Yet they were still able to stay with Oregon and had a chance to win that game. But of course, Tegra Shibola came back in the second half of that game. But just everything that offensive line has been through, and you know that Ryan Day and Chip Kelly, yeah, what happened against Michigan, that was just a bad plan for what you had on hand. But boy, they got the plan right on Saturday night against a supposedly almost just as talented defensive front of Tennessee. And you know those two breakaway touchdown runs by Travion Henderson, and then the two crushing inside, not really inside, kind of like angle runs by Quinshon Judkins. You know they giggled about that all Sunday, right? Because you counted out the run game for Ohio State. Well, boom, here it is in your face.
Yes,
I mean,
I agree.
you're a
But I
former
think
player, man. You know what that means, right?
absolutely, and I think it was great to see Ryan Day, Chip Kelly, Justin Fry, get this combination right, get the flow. You and I might have even texted that I was a little leery about, having a rotational aspect going into this football game, just because, are you really rolling with a hot hand, in like with everything on the line? And so I'm extremely proud that it worked out. And again, I go back to the game plan. I think it's also encouraging that although we want to run the football, running the foot, and yes, we did pop the two big runs where Trayvon was stymied on the second one, and then found stayed
Yeah.
alive, but all because the offensive linemen were still attached and kind of running their feet, and he had no color, grabbing on him. He was able to find that little hole, and then Trayvon just did what Trayvon does and just runs away from defenders.
Yeah.
I still think that in this case, it seemed as if, without going back and watching the game, the run game was an accessory to the pass game.
Yes.
Which in many cases, from a Big Ten standpoint and from an Ohio State standpoint, it's all we've known is kind of it's been flipped, right? Where, Urban wanted to run this way and then this way and then throw it over your head. And that's what happens in a season. That's what happens in a football game. But I do believe loosening up this Tennessee Volunteer defense with the pass game and threatening the defensive backs with Jeremiah Smith down the field and scheming some of those flood routes with G Scott or the in route and the back out route by Ibuka on the sideline, it's demoralizing for a defense. And then you have this offensive line playing with great confidence, protecting Will Howard, attaching at the line of scrimmage, running their feet, and two of the most very talented running backs in all of college football right behind that too.
Yeah.
Tennessee, and I've read as much as I could in, small little pockets that really don't care anymore now that we've beaten them, is just how on their heels and how reeling they were, not just on defense. They were reeling on offense. To go back to your initial point about how Tylee Hamilton inside, making it, with no movement by a very big Tennessee offensive line. Then you move into the second layers, my group, it's like you got, Sonny Styles and Cody Simon were making people pay, and I love, I almost want to go back in slow-mo him cracking that helmet, and then I know that's cold and that's a soft shell, with that Vice helmet, which I'm familiar with, but like you got to deliver a blow, to be able to, crack a helmet. And I think it just goes to show that we were playing angry, that they were, trying to, vilify this Tennessee Volunteer football team to undo and take out some of the frustration maybe from the lack of success against that team up north and potentially, and of course, not playing in the Big Ten championship game.
Yeah, they cracked the helmet. They cracked the code, man. They
Yes.
cracked the code on Saturday night against a team that thought it was underrated. Of course, every SEC team thinks it's underrated. I think Notre Dame may crack a code here on Georgia, because Georgia without a starting quarterback, it's going to be interesting.
It
By the
is.
way, I meant to mention this up top, ladies and gentlemen, but I get carried away sometimes with my own rhetoric. And I think anybody who watches this most of the time does see my ego jump in, even though I don't consider myself egotistical, but I sound like a guy, an egotist at times. But I meant to tell you that also got a little conversation with Bill Bender of the Sporting News, our national football writer, who happens to be HQ'd in Pickerington, Ohio, which is convenient for me. But I tell you what, Matt, let's get to my conversation with him real quick, and we're going to come back and talk more about Ohio State. But Bill Bender giving us, from his perspective, how the national scene looks now after the first round. A lot of people call it the disappointing in terms of a competitive nature of the first round of the first ever expanded 12-team college football playoff look. And then we'll be back with more conversations with my co-pilot, Matt Wilhelm. But here's Bill Bender. As promised, man. Got to have my superstar on, Bill Bender, all-seeing, all-knowing, national writer for the Sporting News. Happens to be a local product from Pickerington. I'm sure deep down inside he won't admit it publicly. But deep down inside, he's been rooting for Jack Sawyer the last couple of weeks. For also a Picktown product, along with his Sonny Styles and Lorenzo Styles Jr. also had a pretty good play on Saturday night, but. Bill Bender, welcome back again to the Tim May Show, man. You're you're my embedded expert when it comes to all things national. And I wanted to ask this real quick before we move into like a little bit of a wider scope. What impressed you most about Ohio State's beatdown of Tennessee, 42-17, in the college football playoff first round game, first ever played in the Ohio Stadium in a frigid on a frigid Saturday night? As I called it, a frigid, frenzied Saturday night.
The first quarter. That's the easiest answer. We spent 3 weeks wondering how are they going to respond? Will they be hungover? What does this mean for Ryan Day's job? And let's be real. I mean, I'd be a liar if I didn't say when you look out and saw how much orange was in the stadium that you thought, oh, yeah, this kind of feels like a funeral. What are we doing? And the way that Ohio State responded on the field on the first drive, Will Howard hits Jeremiah Smith. They scored three touchdowns and three possessions. It was a knockout punch. That was the Ohio State home run swing that we've been waiting to see all season. I had the total yards in front of me earlier, but the first quarter was complete dominance. And Will Howard, I remember at the end he was pumping his arms up, and I asked him a poorly worded question last night. I said, "Were you releasing frustration?" I think the better word would have been relief, probably. You know that the preparation paid off, and I think the pressure's off this team now.
Well, he tried to deflect the questions even earlier in the week about, Michigan's done. There's nothing they can do about the Michigan game, and it's moving on. But, us being journalists, you always bring it up. What about that scab on your arm? You know what I mean? So, I wrote about Will Howard for our Sunday Letterman Row edition. It's not really an edition; just comes out when it comes out. But the bottom line was, Will Howard was on point. As I said to him, he was dropping dimes in the Coke bottle, man. That first quarter, especially. I mean, when you see a big time passing quarterback throwing passes with that pinpoint accuracy in a game of that magnitude, he is dialed in. And then of course you're throwing to maybe the best receiver in the country, best receiving core in the country. Do not discount Emeka Egbuka and that catch he made down the middle in the seam to set up their second touchdown. But Jeremiah Smith, the fact he got what no targets in the second half of the Michigan game is still a quandary. But we all see when they get him involved and get him involved early what he can do. Now, with that said, I'm sure people are going to discount Tennessee now and how good it was based on the fact that they had quite a few guys banged up, including their all SEC SEC Offensive Player of the Year, Dylan Sampson, at running back. How banged up he was going into the game, nobody ever clarified. Their wide receiver core was banged up, and if it wasn't, it was after that game. But Tennessee was a number 9 seed, and Ohio State beat them like a number 12 seed. And I think that's the best way of putting it, right?
Well, I mean, that was the theme of the weekend. And here's how this moves a little bit off of Ohio State, but the theme of the weekend, we had four first round playoff games, the excitement of being on campus. The average margin of victory was 19.3 points per game in those games. Ohio State, if you would have said, Tim, if you asked me last Wednesday, pick the largest margin blowout, I probably would have got the order completely wrong because I thought Notre Dame, Indiana would be about where it was. I thought Clemson, Texas actually got that one right. 14 point, not a blowout, but a game. Didn't think Penn State would win by quite that much and had no idea Ohio State would win 42-17. You know, it was the worst, the most magnified blowout of the weekend. And, I mean, obviously, I think though the silver lining here is that it sets up an amazing quarterfinal round. And we can quibble about who should have been 9 through 12. Doesn't really matter to me. What you get now is a three of the top five brands in college football and a couple underdogs, and Oregon's 13-0. And
What you getting? What you getting now
you
is
get,
chalk.
I like chalk. I don't mind it. I don't mind it at this point. You got two Big Ten teams playing out in the Rose Bowl in a classic, would have been a classic Rose Bowl otherwise. And I think Ohio State if you rank these teams 1 through 8 right now, it'd probably shuffle a little bit. I mean, Ohio State's favored to beat Oregon for a reason.
I mean, in Notre Dame, I mean, I'm telling you, I can almost see this one coming, and I'll probably have to eat these words. Notre Dame is very good on defense, very good on defense, just like Ohio State. I mean, Ohio State's got the number one defense in the country, and people seem to be, some people just keep kind of overlooking that. I mean, in his third iteration under Jim Knowles, they are playing, man. They're playing at a veteran level. Even against Ohio, even against Michigan, with the exception of one play in that game where Mullings got loose for 27 yards and set up Michigan's go-ahead field goal, which was big. That was a winning field goal. But bottom line is, this defense is playing at an elite level. I'm very curious about Georgia and its quarterback situation because, it looks like Carson Beck is not going to be able to go based on all the insiders you're hearing from, et cetera. And that makes them a different team. They already were, in my opinion, a question mark in this playoff because they are nowhere near what they've been, in my opinion, the last several years. Even last year, I think, when they didn't even make the playoff. But I think Notre Dame is primed. What's just your take on that one?
Curiosity. I think
Curiosity.
the pick I had for the title game a week ago was Oregon, Ohio State, or Oregon, Georgia. But I could see Notre Dame and Ohio State winning these matchups. And I could absolutely see Notre Dame and Ohio State playing each other in the national championship game in a classic that would rival what we saw last year. The
Yes.
curiosity factor is, can Notre Dame actually win this one?
Yeah.
And I think I want to pick them so badly because Georgia has a backup quarterback and because Georgia has had a hit or miss team this year. I mean, when they're on there, I would say this, I always use that baseball analogy. Ohio State and Georgia have the best home run swings in college football.
Yeah.
Are they consistent with it? No, but they can knock you out with it. And I could just as easily see Georgia in that matchup in the Sugar Bowl beating Notre Dame because I don't know if Riley, it's going to come down to Riley Leonard's got to throw the ball a little bit. So that is the curiosity factor. Gunnar Stockton, will he fill in for Carson Beck? I thought he was pretty functional when they played Texas in the SEC championship game in the second half. He actually played pretty well and they ran the ball.
Except for one huge mistake,
Well, that one mistake with 2.5 minutes left. But other than
Yeah,
that,
but that was big.
was I think he's a lesser version of Stetson Bennett, what they had when they had Stetson Bennett. And
Gotcha.
he'll make a few plays with his legs too. But I'm absolutely really close to picking Notre Dame in that game, and I will not be surprised if they win.
And let me ask you this. A lot of people around the country, pundits, whatever you want to call them, guys like me, guys even like you, but a lot of people around the country have called the first round basically not a farce, but like I said, it went chalk, right? And they were all double digit wins, right? Yeah,
Yeah.
all double digit wins. Was it a waste of time for the teams that won? By waste of time, I mean, did you really ever need 12? Like I always said, if you're going to expand, the magic number was 8 because of what, in my opinion, of what we just saw over the weekend. I thought 8 would have gotten rid of the riffraff for the most part. What's your take on that?
I'm okay with it. I just posted a column at Sporting News on Sunday, like afternoon. I got into it and I had my thoughts. Everybody was arguing about it. They were arguing about it in the press box for the hours that we were waiting for the game. And SMU belongs or this team belongs. You know what? Bottom line, Tim, 9, 10, 11, 12 are out. And we could have had an 8-team playoff. I think the tweaks to me are simple. One, they got to seed this thing like they seed the rankings. I don't think Ohio State and Oregon should be playing here. Ohio State should have been a 5 or 6, maybe even a 4, depending on how high you want to go. And they should not be playing Oregon in the second round of the playoff.
But you know what? The committee, you know this, the committee in their voting and everything else, whatever they do with those checkers, before they finally release the initial pairings, they could have set it up where Ohio State was not playing Oregon in this second round, the quarterfinals, very easily by making Ohio State a 7 seed,
Right.
I mean, so, it's almost like that's why some people believe in conspiracy theories, because it's almost like, the conspiracy theorists would say they wanted one of these Big Ten juggernauts gone by the semifinals. That's the way I would look at it. Meanwhile, you because of the rules you set up previously, and you got to stick by rules when you set them up. At least one ACC team had to be in the field, which was the champion, the winner of the ACC championship game, which was Clemson, when in fact it didn't look like either one of Clemson or SMU in the final analysis really belonged. Clemson made a run, I know, in the second half at Texas, but didn't really look like they belonged this year. They were not ever considered one of the elite teams this year. So if you tweak this, Bill Bender, if you had a form in front of you, I can set this up any way I want. Would it just be, for me, it'd be an 18-8 team tournament with 1 through 8, no matter who they are, ranked by a committee that would set it up, and it wouldn't guarantee basically anyone anything. What's your take on that?
I don't mind it. Because I think that's what we have this round, right? Like this would be that round of eight where nobody's owed anything. Those two
Right.
ACC teams aren't in. You slip Boise State in their seed in this, in your scenario, that their seed right now is too high.
Yeah.
But I don't mind the games on campus. I wish the second round was on campus.
I agree.
Not going to happen yet. Because those Bulls have, I think people underestimate how much power the Bulls have in the sport.
No, nobody. I mean, yeah, if you underestimate it, then you haven't been paying attention for low the last 80 years.
Yeah, because they're not going to like just give that up overnight.
Right.
And I think if it were me, I would go eight first round on campus. Then you can do four. You can rotate the New Year. Maybe you rotate the New Year's Day six every other year. The Rose Bowl loses its spot in the, but they did that with the BCS. So
Yeah.
like it can be done that way. You could do half of the New Year's Day six 1 year for the locations, half the other year. That way you're only sending, for example, Ohio State fans, it is a lot of travel to go from
Yeah. No, I like
Columbus
your
to.
original idea. The first round, the round of eight would be played on the higher
Yeah.
seed campuses. Then you'd have two of your basically New Year's Eve of six New Year's Day bowl games. Two of them would host just like they were doing before, and
Right.
then you'd have a championship game the 8 or 9 days later, and boom, college football's over by January the 10th. I mean, I thought that was pretty well set up there, and I think that would work, but they're not going to go to eight. If anything, they're going to go to 16, right,
I know we're
eventually.
going to, you know that. What
Yeah.
sport in America has contracted its playoff?
Right.
None. We keep growing and putting more teams in. And Dennis Dodd had a good point on Twitter last night. He said something to the fact, if you think expanding the playoff is about Indiana and SMU, it's really not. It's
No.
about giving the chalk the looks. And so we get these matchups. But as I keep pointing out, if you look at these four matchups in the quarterfinal, if you compare that to the NFL playoffs, my favorite weekend of the NFL playoffs is the divisional round.
Yeah.
And in this quarterfinal round, we're getting Florida State. Florida State did not make the
No.
quarterfinals.
No.
Penn State and Boise State, they're combined 10 and 0 in the Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah.
You get Ohio State, Oregon. You get Georgia, Notre Dame, which we talked about. And then you get Arizona State, Texas is kind of the outlier. But Arizona State was arguably the
Hey.
hottest team in the country. And they could make that interesting.
Yes, absolutely can. And I covered because Ohio State was playing about 5 or 6, 7 days later in the BCS championship game in 2006, and I covered that Boise State Oklahoma game in the Fiesta Bowl when Boise State pulled the upset, and then the young man proposed to the cheerleader after he scored the winning touchdown on the Statue of Liberty play. But the point is, Boise State's an enigma to me in this group because they seem so reliant on Ashton Jeanty, and yet their quarterback seems to make plays when has seemed to make plays when he's had to this year. I'm very curious about that matchup with Penn State, which is still a head puzzler, even though the last two games they've looked fairly I was going to say interesting is not the right word. Fairly potent offensively, which is a little bit out of character for them. But Boise State and Penn State in that Fiesta Bowl on Tuesday night, which we'll all get to watch before going to the Rose Bowl on Wednesday on January the 1. That's probably the more curious game I've got in my head. I do think Texas handles Arizona State. I do think Notre Dame pulls the upset of Georgia. But then, Ohio State and Oregon are is a toss up for me. How about you?
Same. And I'll do my picks, later this week. But I originally had Oregon. I may change that. I will probably pick Georgia, but I see your point on Notre Dame. It's like I believe it when I see it. I mean, I've talked myself into Notre Dame against Georgia before. They've played some close games. Played a close game down there at Sanford Stadium a few years ago. And but these weren't the same teams. And I think do they get after Georgia in the Sugar Bowl? That will be my biggest question. I mean, to me, Oregon, Ohio State's a toss-up as well. I think we're going to see a game very similar to last time. And the good thing about it is both of those teams literally left that field. And I think we've talked about this. Ohio State left thinking, hey, man, we had a field goal. We could have won that game at the end. And Oregon probably left thinking, hey, we left 10 points on the board. So if we get aggressive Ryan Day and the approach that he had last Saturday, and then you get Dan Lanning being aggressive as usual, it's going to make for one heck of a game.
Hey, put you on the spot here, and then we'll be done. But I'm looking at Notre Dame. I'm looking at Riley Leonard. I remember Riley Leonard before he got hurt last year at Duke, and it was in the Notre Dame game, ironically. But he has come on, in the last half of the season when they finally figured out what he does best on offense. But is he a poor man's Haynes King, or is Haynes King a rich man's Riley Leonard? I think I just said the same thing, didn't I?
I think they both have plenty
Is
of
Haynes
money.
King a poor man's Riley Leonard? But you know what Haynes King did to Georgia? You know what I mean? Scared him to death. Can a quarterback with the capabilities of a Riley Leonard, which seemed to be average in the throwing game, but elite when he has to make a run, and can he make that the game that Notre Dame needs to see to have a chance? Because I think Notre Dame's defense is also going to be a major factor.
I think both of those guys have plenty of money through name, image, and likeness right now. So neither one of them's poor, or maybe they're not completely rich. But I actually was talking about that last night, that I really thought Notre Dame will probably rip some pages out of Georgia Tech's playbook, no question, because they'll be a little bit of quarterback power sweep with him up in the middle. They'll try to get Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price on the edge. They are going to be a challenge for Georgia running the football. And where I worry is, Jordan Faison, the lacrosse player slash receiver, had a big night against Indiana. I think they're going to use him a lot against Georgia too. Georgia is not, it's important for everyone to know, Georgia is not the typical Georgia. They did play a hell of a schedule. Understand that. But this isn't the invincible 21 Georgia team that burned through, or Michigan both, in 21 or hammer TCU the following season. This is a much different team, and they got a big question at quarterback. So if you were, like I said, Tim, if you're picking Notre Dame, I'm not going to sit here and well, I would never make fun of you anyway, but maybe a little, but no, I wouldn't think twice about it.
Right. Hey, last thing, Bill. I know I said that, but you always have a bonus question, a quickie. You've watched this Ohio State team all year, sometimes live, sometimes not. What just stood out to you most about that game against Tennessee from the standpoint of just the fervor with which the offense and the defense took the field? Did it look like the team that you thought it would look like in August? You understand what I'm saying? A quarterback on point. Two running backs contributing heavily, Trevion Henderson with a great game, and then a wide receiver core second to none in the nation, an offensive line that got its act together with basically playing musical chairs at the guard spots for the most part in that game. Luke Montgomery getting his first extended action as a Buckeye and looking really good when he was in there at one of the guard spots, usually left guard. And then defensively, Tui Moloau and Jack Sawyer, and then Tyleik Williams and Ty Hamilton controlling things, man, for the most part at the line of scrimmage and getting constant pressure on Nico Iamalieva. Hey, I said it right for the first time
Yeah.
ever. Now it's too late. And then the defensive backs playing extremely well. Lathan Ransom coming out with one of the big hits, for a tackle for loss out on the edge, right on down the line. It kind of looked like that team you envisioned to see all year long, didn't it?
For sure. And aside from a blip in the second quarter that had some help, there was an interception that might not have been an interception, quite
No.
frankly.
Yeah. Well,
There
I
was
thought there was
a,
pass interference on the play, but go ahead.
and then there was a roughing the passer call that was flat out wrong. They
Yeah.
did have it, but either bad calls or not, Ohio State had a little bit of a lull in the second quarter, but then they picked it right back up in the second half. And,
Yeah. The most impressive thing they did, right?
You and I were, this kind of brings the conversation full circle. And talking to Jack Sawyer, you could, and Will Howard and Donovan Jackson and the play, not just the coaches, you could tell the phrase I've been using is the worst thing that could have happened already happened to them. The worst thing in the world that could have happened happened, and they got a second life and they took advantage of it. And you know what? Here's something else, Tim. Some people were maybe expecting Ryan Day to puff out his chest a little bit and, go after whoever, because he had a tough 3 weeks. They're calling for
Yeah.
him to get fired. And everybody, I think Sporting News, we wrote a list too. Everybody wrote a candidate list and he's not going anywhere, one. And, but he was on to the next one mode,
Yeah.
talking about execution, talking about, and that was the thing that stuck out to me that what he said was, it was about the execution in the game. We
Oh,
didn't
yeah.
execute,
Always
execute,
is.
execute. And it wasn't about Michigan having more talent, or I don't even, I'm starting to wonder if it's even about a mental block in their head or anything like that. I just think they didn't execute well. And especially on the offensive side of the ball, which, when Will Howard's on point, this is a damn good team that can absolutely hold that trophy up at the end of the road here.
Yeah. And it's like, I think you were there. I mean, the drop by Carnell Tate on that crossing route where he might have kept running forever against Michigan on their first Ohio State's first of only two possessions in the fourth quarter. Will Howard's right on point with that pass and stuff, but sometimes it takes two to tango, and you never know what play is going to change a game or change it irrevocably. And they made all the plays for the most part against Tennessee. And you kind of feel sorry for those Vols fans having to drive 6 hours back. But I reminded most people it was most of it would be downhill. But Bill, last thing, do you anticipate any kind of like surprise in this next round of games?
No,
I don't
I
think
don't.
Notre Dame over Georgia would be a huge surprise. That's just my thinking, but go ahead.
Me neither. And I don't think Ohio State over Oregon would be. So I anticipate that those two games, I'll put it to you this way. I'd be stunned if Boise State beat Penn State. I know they got Ginty. I know there's Fiesta Bowl magic there. I'd be probably be stunned if Arizona State beat Texas.
Yeah.
I mean, those are double digit spreads. So as for the other two games, I guess I'd be stunned if Oregon Ohio State wasn't high scoring. I think they'll go back at it, trade blows, much like last time.
Yeah.
Maybe an overtime game, maybe a fourth down call decides that one late. And but I'll say this, if one team were going to blow out the other, I think Ohio State would blow out Oregon. I don't think Oregon's going to blow out Ohio State. And I'll be stunned if Georgia Notre Dame isn't a defensive struggle,
Yeah.
like a 17-14 old school Sugar Bowl
Yeah.
headbanger between those
Yeah.
two. So if those two got in the 30s, I'd be like, yeah, I'm stunned that that happened.
Yeah. I agree with everything you just said, Bill Bender. I don't know what's wrong with me. Maybe I didn't have enough coffee today. But hey, Bill, always appreciate you coming on the Tim May Show. I think you know that, right?
Always, Tim, and I appreciate it. And, no, I won't be out in Pasadena. I'll be watching from the couch. But if things go according to plan, we might not have to meet in the 270 loop. We may be meeting in Atlanta.
There you go, baby. There you go. I'm looking forward to it. Bill Bender, ladies and gentlemen of the Sporting News. Happy holidays, Bill Bender, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you as well.
Bill made a point, but all the national pundits made a point. Boy, the first round, in terms of compelling football, left a lot to be desired. But of course, unless you're an Ohio State fan, and this is a team, like you pointed out earlier, this is a team fans thought they were going to see 12 straight games in the regular season in the Big Ten championship game, and then getting a bye and playing three games in the college football playoff on the way to a national championship. But at least it finally showed up, right? I mean, the complete picture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you're right. And I do believe, just as the, NIL landscape and the transfer portal landscape are evolving and kind of changing as rulings are being made, I do believe that, I know that after the playoff teams were announced, Kirk Herbstreit and many other national pundits were, very critical of not only teams that were in, but also the placement of where those teams were at. In this case, with us playing Oregon, it's almost punishing Oregon for being undefeated to have to play a very good Ohio State team second again. So that said, I think it's an opportunity for them to go back and potentially fix it. I do think that it was a little underwhelming of a weekend. From a Buckeye standpoint, to kind of be the grand finale of those first four football games to take care of our business the way that we did. Of course, as Buckeye fans, we're all extremely happy, but I don't think the committee, and I don't think the goal was to have multiple games kind of like not close for long, almost the entire games or long periods of time. Because really, Clemson and Texas was the only one that was mildly in limbo, and I don't believe it was ever less than a touchdown throughout most of the football game. So I think that's something that they're going to address. But I think for us, we talked all season, or at least I talked all season about having, my experience in the National Football League and having a first round bye and how beneficial that is to your body and to your mind. We heard Kirby Smart talk about it after the gauntlet that is the SEC and winning the SEC championship game. After the performance we put out against the University of Tennessee, I am reluctant to say that I'm very happy we played that game. I think for our seniors to undo the taste of their last experience at Ohio Stadium against our rival, and to go into that setting, that our home game, and win that football game, I'm very, happy for them to be able to walk out of that place a winner. And now you go on the road and you're playing these bowl games in the tournament, and because we saw them take a business-like approach, I expect Ryan Day and this football team from this point forward to continue to take a business-like approach, to scheme, to let it all hang out, to get loose. I think to tweak, things that we didn't do that well. Because I do think, some of those counter runs, those like kind of letting those edge guys get upfield and just having that guard center guard kind of win and have, that like delay, little delay handoff, with, great footwork by, Henderson and Junkins. And then like they were hitting, they were up on those backers before they were getting hit for 3, 4 yards. So that's kudos to Justin Fry and Chip Kelly to orchestrate and scheme up the proper run. So, we are the scariest team of the eight teams remaining, and I know that four of four teams played this past weekend. But I would say, as a consensus with no bias, our win was scarier than the way Texas beat Clemson. Our win was scarier than the way Notre Dame beat Indiana. Our win was scarier than the way Penn State beat SMU, because SMU, in some cases, showed they didn't quite belong. And also, 14 of those points, and the momentum's, really swung out of balance very early in that football game, as it was a dogfight had it not been for those interceptions that went for a touchdown. So we're the scariest team in football. And I think, although, Dan Lanning's a tough guy, Dan Lanning's going to have Oregon ready. I think Dan Lanning's got to do some self-reflection and look back on our football game, because they have not been the juggernaut in many cases that, so many thought they would have been, having gone undefeated. So we're better than we were then. And I think, Oregon now has to, look at themselves and watch our film and go, "Holy crap, how do we stop these guys?" And I think it's a great feeling after our win.
As long as Ohio State stays diverse, and as long as Ohio State starts with the pass, I mean, doesn't mean your first play is a pass, but shoot, I was talking about this before the Michigan game. That was just, even though Ohio State threw 33 passes in that game and only ran the ball 26 times, like we talked about a week ago, a couple of weeks ago, 10 of those runs should have been passes, the way I looked at it, because of what, you're insisting on running through the brick
Well,
wall
and I'll just say,
instead of,
yards per attempt. Would you rather have yards per attempt if you're getting 4.5 through the air and you're only getting 1.9 on the ground? I'd rather take the 45 yards than the 18 yards.
But
That's just
Jeremiah
stupid.
Smith is, he might be the best receiver in college football right now. You can say he's a freshman. He's no longer a freshman. He's played 13 games now, and he's asserted himself physically, he's up to it. Obviously, mentally, he's up to it. You just don't want him to go out of character like he did on that last drive against Oregon, where he got frustrated by those guys just jumping on him right at the
Well, and
break.
Tim, and Tim, don't be, and again, they're going to come back and they're going to
Oh,
coach.
yeah.
They're going to show the film. They're going to do it again.
Yeah, they're
I
going to do the
think
same thing,
that,
trying to do the same thing to Denzel Burke. Yep.
the two deep balls, that Jeremiah Smith, again, Jeremiah Smith's not going to go unnoticed, but when
No.
Jeremiah Smith, is the game breaker that he was in our first college football playoff game, Oregon's going to be ready for him. So what does that mean from a schematic standpoint? That means, G. Scott, Carnell Tate, Emeka Ibuka, and our two backs. And I thought that's the one thing that Ryan Day and Chip Kelly did very well was not only in the run game with some of the counter stuff that I talked about, but some of those like the tear motions, and
Yep.
getting them, out on the perimeter. That's a very easy, high efficient, quick throw for Will Howard. He does not even have to read the play. He just gets it to skill. And then you've got Ibuka and Jeremiah Smith and G. Scott maybe flexed out blocking for him. And it's like,
Yep.
one guy gets a little undisciplined, and it's an outside sweep,
Yeah.
that extension of the run game, when you throw it behind the line of scrimmage,
Of
and then it's
course.
just an elite running back with his buddies out in front of him, and it's one guy gets a little nosy and out of his gap, which sounds like a run play, and it's like, down the sideline for 25 yards. So
Yep.
I thought we schemed that up. We schemed them up very well. We took advantage of the opportunities. We used our skill, which is, probably the best in the country, or if not one of the best. But we have to know, I would not be surprised that if Jeremiah Smith, the top, they will have someone underneath and kind of an umbrella on top of him to not let him catch the big one. So then we have to force feed him maybe in a possession type of situation where, hitches and outs and slants and maybe off the RPO and maybe some underneath routes with some mesh concepts. But then the bigger down the field opportunities, and it's not that they're slouches by any means and can go do it because we've seen it all year, is with Carnell Tate and Emeka Ibuka.
Yeah.
And even some of the, hiding G. Scott, you kind of fall asleep on the Ohio State tight ends the way that we've had with Stover in years past and these guys. And I think G. Scott's very much like Stover, where it's just like he doesn't do anything for a whole game. And then he catches a 32-yard, big over route because, Tate, Ibuka, and Jeremiah Smith just took the whole back end of the defense and he just slices back underneath. And, Will Howard has the protection and the patience. And I think that's the one other thing to give, one last little bit of props to Justin Fry and the offensive line is, yes, you have the skill and the skill can go get open, but if you don't have time to throw the football, which at times as the game went on against that team up north, we didn't. We were losing one-on-one battles and Will
Yep.
Howard was getting hit an awful lot and not throwing from the cleanest pocket. You're hard pressed to go watch that football game against Tennessee and really see Will Howard under a lot of duress.
Yeah.
So you open up that playbook wide when you can block up their front or pick up their blitzes, and then you also know what coverage they're playing on the back end. And then you have the talent that we have, and I think that's what we saw offensively was a little bit of a perfect storm of execution both up front and on the back end, and then Will Howard was just distributing the football very well.
It's funny because I wrote a story that was we posted on lettermanrow.com the early afternoon on Saturday before the game, and it was about Will Howard, and it was about how you judge quarterbacks. We saw in three of the other three playoff games, the team that got beat, their quarterback did not start hot, and in some points looked frozen. In the case of SMU, in the case of Indiana. And Rourke never got his feet under him. Didn't look like till the fourth quarter. If your quarterback starts hot, it's always about your quarterback. Will Howard has not been hotter this year than he was in the first quarter on Saturday night. He was, as I said, he was dropping dimes on Tennessee. I mean,
Yeah,
that seam
and
route to
Tim,
Emeka Ibuka, are you kidding me?
and Tim, it's so that's the so that's the thing. So that's again, not to take anything away from Will Howard. He played very well, but that's where I want to say, like, this collaborative, like, preparation by the
Yes.
Buckeyes and their execution, because Chip Kelly's got to call the play, knowing what he's going to get out of Tennessee's defense. The exact. Is it blitz or what? What type of rush? What type of coverage are they playing on the back end? And then you call the play to get Ibuka up the seam. He's probably not running a choice route where he's going to choose to run a seam. He's running a seam because you know exactly where the window is in zone, or you flash a
Yes.
football, you get an undisciplinized, by a specific nickel, and Ibuka runs by him for that seam. So we were dialed in our understanding of what we were going to get from Tennessee. And Ryan and Chip collaboratively, along with, again, that protection with Justin Fry and his group up front, called, I don't want to say called the perfect play, but called the right play. And Will Howard made the right throw an awful lot on Saturday night, which is why it made it look so easy.
Tell you what, go back and watch the last three quarters, but pretty much the second half, Georgia against Tennessee. Carson Beck, he's banged up now, but Carson Beck, was up and down all year because of, they had a lot of problems, not just, but he threw for 300 and what, 26 yards, his best game of the year, in my opinion, against that Tennessee defense. And you could see it on that video. If you're Ohio State, you're a fool if you don't take advantage of some of those things you just pointed out. And but your quarterback has got to be on,
He
man,
does.
because
He's got to be
it's
on, and
like
he's
a
got to be
pitcher.
protective.
You bring a pitcher and you put a pitcher in the World Series game. He's got to be on from the start because there were things to reap there. And Ohio State was 21 nothing out of the gate. It doesn't get any better than that in any game, but
No.
especially a game, a playoff caliber game. I want to ask you this real quick before we get done here. With Oregon, what is the, because you did this a lot in the NFL, played a team a second time. Well, everybody in your division, or your division, you played two times.
Yep.
What is different the second time you play a team like this? I mean, Ohio State's playing Oregon, a team in its league again,
Sure.
also now, but so you have all this other video of them struggling against Wisconsin, and and in some of the times when they've been red hot and stuff, but what is different about playing a team a second time?
So it's a great question, and I'm glad you brought it up. I think so much of it is there's some unknowns, I guess you can say, when you play a team or you're not accustomed to playing a team, year in, year out, and especially when you play a team a second time, it's the second you rattled off, or to Donovan Jackson that you're going to play Oregon, he's going to rattle off, oh, they're an odd front, they like to do this, their favorite blitz is this, they roll the safety down, they can, and it's like you're dialed, and you rattle off the likes that they who of who they are, defensively. And on the flip side, same for the offense, or I mean on the offensive defense. So there's just a familiarity with personnel,
Yeah.
there's a familiarity with a style of play. I think and from a coaching standpoint, after you play them a second time, I'm sure, like every game, there's calls that you wish you had back, but you're like, you know what? I thought they were going to bring a blitz, and I knew we should have ran something with a hot,
Yeah.
on third and four, right? But we didn't. We ran these upfield routes, and I'm like, you put those little lessons in the back of your memory bank for the next time you're going to play Oregon. In this case, it's going to be on a bigger stage than it was in the regular season, with everything on the line, not even waiting till next season or 2026 when we play them again, right?
Yeah.
Dan Lanning likes to bring that, boundary pressure on third and seven plus. You apply that immediately to that next football game. So there's a familiarity with each other. And then it's also like that's the checkers or low level chess level. But now if you get into the advancements, it's, well, what are they going to do? They can't do this. They're going to do these things that we know. That's the checkers aspect.
Yeah.
But what are they going to do different that we have to be
Weak.
prepared for? And what can we do different, to anticipate? And that's the one thing I will say, where I would not be surprised with, 10, 11 days off before we play another football game. It's, if you're studying Dan Lanning, all his football, you're going back even maybe some of the time that he spent, at Georgia, and studying, even like looking at Kirby Smart in situations to go, what's the personality? And that's the one thing I kind of pride myself in doing when I'm, helping Coach St. Ed's, is like, what's the personality of the play caller?
Yeah.
When push comes to shove, on a specific down and distance with the game on the line, or a must have it situation, either getting a stop or calling a play, what is the offensive caller, what's he defer to?
Yeah, as I
Is it
call it,
something, is it something you
what's
is it
his
bread and
default
butter?
button?
Is it, yeah,
Yeah.
what is it bread and butter stuff, or is it unique and something you haven't seen before? And there's an anticipation, and I'm sure, Chip Kelly could talk about it, I'm sure, ad nauseum, about that, anticipating what you're going to get, anticipating what you're going to see. And we saw what happens when we get it right an awful lot against Tennessee. And I think when you go back and study Oregon, Now, they're not going to change who they are, right? As an undefeated football team, their core of what they like to do with speed and blitz and the down the field routes and running the football game and getting rid of the football quickly with Dylan Gabriel and some of the quarterback run stuff is all going to be the same. It's all just going to get tweaked to make it look different. And like I said, both teams or every team from this point forward, all eight remaining, it's win or go home. So like, you're going to have some gadgets. You're going to have some, I say, some Hail Mary type of calls that if, you know, say Ohio State runs out on them 20, I'll say 24-7, you know, at the start of the second quarter, and Ohio State gets the football. Oregon's reeling. You know, what do they do? You know, it stops, and then how do you move the football quickly? You know, on a very, very good, very stingy Ohio State defense to get back in this football game. And so it's you role play those games on the game flow to be ready to call those things, you know, in a matter of 20 seconds in the actual football game.
Yeah. And, you know, nobody, I mean, Denzel Burke be the first to tell you his second quarter, first time they played, you know, that won't be on any tape he sends any NFL team, even though the
No.
NFL
Well,
teams
they'll
have
have it
it.
anyway, but
But
sure, you're right.
that's what I wanted to ask you one last thing. Like you brought it up at the beginning of that is, you know them. You don't do, just, you're not going to just know what they like to do. You're going to know what the individual likes to do, and you're going to know what the individual wasn't good at. So it is, as much as it's you're playing the same team again, you're not really. If they're smart, if they're doing their homework, they've done their homework. If they've looked in the mirror, sometimes that's the toughest thing I think for players to do is look in the mirror and go, "Hey, I was not good enough this
Yeah.
first time.
And
This is not symbolic of what I'm all about. This is my shot to show everybody." You know what I mean? There are all
yeah,
these things
sure.
that go on in a rematch, right?
And the one other point that I was going to make is sometimes, you know, when you're in, especially in the regular season, you're learning so much information, you're playing that football game, then you're losing that information, scrubbing your brain essentially, and preparing for your next opponent. Right, you're learning all kinds of, so it's like it's very cyclical. And in this case, when you play someone twice, you go back to that database, you pull out that information again, right? The good and the bad, what lessons can we have learned, what opportunities were out there that we didn't take advantage of, or and vice versa. And you bridge that gap to the point where, you know, this receipt again, so these little nuances that, you know, you and I could probably talk about until, you know, the cows come home. But it's like, you know, when so and so number, I don't know, and I'm not rattling off their names or their numbers, but like when number nine's lined up into the boundary, he only runs these two different routes, right? And you didn't pick that up when you played them the first time. But then when you play the game and then you go watch your film and you study that film, you go, shoot, you know, now Denzel or Igbinosin, whoever's going to be into the boundary on him, is going to be prepared. When number nine's in the boundary, all he's running is a hitch or a slant, you know. And I'm not trying to say you sit on one and get a pick, but like you're prepared for that. You're not surprised by some of the things. You're not surprised by the speed of the players. You're not surprised by the speed of the potentially offensive execution. You're just much more settled. And then also, I think in preparation, you can then implement some of those strategies throughout your week of practice, you know, for speed of play. And then you start to chess piece maybe some of your scout team guys, you know, that were just going out there and giving you a look. Now you start chess piecing your guys to go have this guy running that hitch or that slant when he's into the boundary, you know, wearing the number nine jersey to kind of like build that, like that muscle memory and mind memory of when you get in the game, it becomes very second nature for you second time around.
Yeah, but also, in my opinion, didn't have him run a go. You know what I mean? Because you can't just sit there and think it's going to be the same.
No,
They're
you've got to rely on
self-scouting.
your technique.
Last thing, I know I said that, but you know, there's always a bonus last thing with
Of
me.
course. Yes, yes.
What is the biggest change from your just watching Ohio State's defense? Because it had a, like I said, it had a look into the mirror moment after the Oregon game, because they did give up 32 points, could have given up more. Oregon's defense could have given up more. They know that also. What's the as you think about Ohio State and the way they've arrayed defensively now, the way they've played defensively now, because no one's come close to scoring 32 on them since that game. What is a change they made that you noticed? I mean, let me just give you my idea. I railed after that game of having three safeties on the field at times and not a safety deep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which didn't help him when Denzel had his struggles in the second quarter, Denzel Burke. But you got maybe the best safety in college football, two of them, in my opinion, Caleb Downs and Lathan Ransom. But now I'm trying to even think of a play where Ohio State went zero. You know what I mean? Since then, because you've got
Yeah.
three guys, including Jordan Hancock, who are pretty adept at getting to the ball. And so that's what I'm looking at is you at least gave yourself a safety valve, pardon the expression,
Yeah.
since then. But what is it that you've noticed about this defense that's different?
Well, the one thing you'll have to say, Tim, going back to the schematics that you just referenced is, and we talked about it doing this each and every week, like the games leading into the battle against, going out to Autzen and playing Oregon. It Akron, Marshall, Western Michigan, Iowa, Michigan State. And yes, we talked about the steps to go play that game, but nobody executes or has the speed that Oregon plays with. And so in some
Right.
cases, you kind of just go with what has always worked, right? You go into the game playing zero, thinking you can get away with playing zero because you have elite talent, in your defensive secondary until you get burned by it. And that's the lesson. You lost on the road by 1 point and you tweak it. Do you still carry it in some cases? The zero stuff, the zero blitz stuff, you carry it, in your toolbox. And I'm sure Knowles might be chomping at the bit to call it every once in a while, but he just doesn't. And that's the growth of him and this specific team. That's also maybe some of the coaches, kind of like, go, no, this is not the time. And you kind of kibosh it if he rolls it out. For me, as the season's gone on, I think the self-confidence in the scheme, that's Jim Knowles and the players and Jim Knowles, players and each other, has consistently gone up, regardless of whether they've won or lost a football game. And I think as the season gone on too, it seems as if along with that self-confidence, they're playing angrier. They're always flying around. They've got, great athletes at every single position, but I think they're playing angrier.
Good
And I think
point.
that's the one thing that I will shine a light on in the football game against the Tennessee Volunteers, coming out of the way in which our game went down and the defense, wasn't the Achilles heel in the game against the team up north, although they couldn't stop the run, late or get a stop late earlier than they should have, is just they're playing angry. They're playing confident, they're playing angry, and that is a dangerous thing. And I think that's what I like most.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's Matt Wilhelm. That's what I like most on a Christmas holiday week.
Evening.
And he's going to be back. We're gonna hook up again in the day or two before the Rose Bowl again, give you a maybe an anatized, I don't even know if that's the correct term, but version of what he really expects to see in the Rose Bowl as Ohio State plays in the Rose Bowl. By the way, a stadium in which Matt Wilhelm played, but not for the Rose Bowl. You
Not
think in
in the
2000,
Rose Bowl, but I played at the Rose Bowl.
2001, when everything went upside down because of
Well,
9/11, but y'all's first game back was a game against UCLA in the Rose Bowl. It's kind of crazy to think about now, isn't it, Matt? A
it
regular
is.
season game, but
It is. And I take immense amount of pride of now current head football coach at UCLA, DeShaun Foster, stymieing his Heisman hopes by playing very well in the Rose Bowl. So I have a lot of great memories of playing in the Rose Bowl, but having a
stadium.
win at Rose Bowl Stadium, but having a win in the Rose Bowl Stadium is one that I don't have.
And having a and or having a win in the Rose Bowl, played at the
Correct.
Rose Bowl Stadium,
Yes.
you never get that shot. Too
Correct.
bad. I'm sure you'll be in there vicariously living with the Buckeyes. But
No doubt.
anyway, but we'll be back. We'll have a little brief. I mean, I don't think anything's ever brief with you and me, but a brief little setup, Tim May special show before Ohio State takes a field in the Rose Bowl against Oregon. I'm looking forward to covering this game for all kinds of reasons. Matt is too, because Matt's alma mater finally got its, I was going to say a word that starts with S, I'll say a word that starts with A, finally got its act together on both sides of the ball and delivered the leave no doubt appearance that everybody's been waiting to see this season. I think you agree with that, right, Matt? I mean, that was a leave no doubt victory
It
over
was a
Tennessee.
leave no doubt victory, and I think you let off this show that it was 42-17, and it felt like 42-3. You
Yes.
know, their touchdowns were forgettable and insignificant, although they did cut it to 11. But you're absolutely right. I mean, this team got their groove back after having it stolen, by that team up north. And I think, as I said again, they are, with the way that they played, the scariest football team left in out of the eight teams based on their performance at home against Tennessee.
Yeah, and when you think about the Davis and Igbinosin down there near the goal line interception on a play when Kenyatta Jackson is hitting Iamalieva as he's throwing the ball, and just literally looked like he even tried to soften the landing for him, and still gets called for a roughing the passer, bogus call. The more I've looked at it, the more bogus it was. And it's
Yeah.
funny that that can't be reviewed, right?
Right.
A hit to the head, targeting can be reviewed. To me, they're the same play. And
Yep.
you can't ever judge intent. But there was a play that kept their drive going, one of their scoring drives going. So, yes, it was a big, it was a bigger, more ferocious beatdown than even the score indicated. But
100%.
now that game's in the rearview mirror. Can Ohio State come out with the same ferocity against the number one team in the country, a team that lost you by 1 point back in October? I think we're all waiting to see that, right, Matt?
Yes, sir, we are. Can't wait to talk about it next week.
And until next week, ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Matt Wilhelm, we'll see you then.